Chuck and Julie, bringing you the truth, straight up.
I'm Julie Hayden. I'm working
at... An Emmy-winning former investigative reporter, a highly successful trial attorney, and publisher of a major Denver area newspaper. They've been partners as talk show hosts and in marriage, as parents, for over 10 years, providing thought-provoking information, opinion, and entertainment live, local, and interactive. Everyone's voice is always welcome on the Chuck and Julie Show.
Well, hello, everyone. This is Chuck for the Chuck and Julie Grassroots Show, True Straight Up. Julie is out keeping our son occupied. It's Christmas vacation. When I had a younger man a couple of years ago, Christmas vacation was like, 5 days, 6 days. It is a month these days. It goes on forever. And you've got to kind of occupy your child forever. She's got him out on some golf course, enjoying himself as he does. I got a letter from my sister who lives over in London. She said, how have I done this year and golf this fall and everything else? And what have you all been doing in addition to golf? And I looked at Julie and said, there's something else other than golf? And Rev's going, no, there's not anything else other than golf. So anyway, it's just me alone. And I decided to do on a person, the show basically, about a person that Julie hates. So, it's better that Julie is not here. And that is the always controversial Nick Fuentes. If you haven't heard of Nick Fuentes, you've been under a rock. That's a practical matter. He's a podcaster. He's been a podcaster for about 10 years. And he's self-admitted a racist. He's a misogynist, white nationalist. I forget any other unpleasant things that he is, but lots of other unpleasant things that he is. And he is burst upon the scene based on two radio or podcast interviews. One by Tucker Carlson, the famous Tucker Carlson, we gave a kind of a friendly interview with. And then the two-hour Piers Morgan, which is just a two-hour battle. Piers trying to do everything he possibly could to disrupt and destroy and hurt good old Nick Fuentes. And it was just a battle royale. So no, not only, Nick Fuentes, there have been other unpleasant characters out there, such as George Lincoln Rockwell. I mean, he was the head of the American Nazi Party back in the 60s. And there's David Duke, who was a white nationalist in Louisiana, who ran for public office. And there are other ones, but they've always been always on the very edges, usually just playthings for the mainstream media to kind of kick around and have fun with and be aghast about. But Nick Fuentes is something totally different. And what is totally different, he has an incredibly large following. He has over 1 million people on Twitter, which is incredible. His podcast reaches hundreds of thousands. And his adherents are called Groypers. You can't ask what that is, but it's some variation of Pepe the Frog meme. And so they're called Groypers. And they're famous for going to Charlie Kirk events and saying that in upstanding, overturning Charlie and asking about immigration, gays, and everything else he doesn't want to talk about. And so he'd scream about them. And so they became famous. Charlie was great at kind of taking on the left. He wasn't there to take on the right. That wasn't what his goal was. And so they were trying to be excluded to the extent they can. But Nick Fuentes was a thorn in the side of Charlie Kirk until his assassination. So first we'll go into who Charlie Kirk enemy Nick Fuentes is, how he became so famous, the results of the two debates, and more importantly, why does he have followers? I mean, why didn't all these other unpleasant individuals have massive followings that Nick Fuentes has? And we'll talk about the two seminal articles that really explained the Nick Fuentes phenomenon. So let's go back 10 years ago. Nick Fuentes was brought up in a suburb of Chicago, Illinois, where he had a very, I don't know, Norman Rockwell-like upbringing. He had a happy family. Parents stayed at home, or at least his wife. His mother stayed at home. His father was a plant supervisor, a middle-class, working kind of guy who was half Mexican himself. His mother, I think, Italian. And then he went off to BU when he turned 18. Now, Boston University is a big school in Boston and is overwhelmingly liberal. Overwhelmingly. I mean, it's where AOC went. And AOC would have found a much happier match. So Nick went there, and Nick was a conservative. He liked to listen to Mark Levin. He used to love to listen to everybody. And he was a huge Trumpster. So he wore his red Trumpster hat all around the university and would get everybody hating him. They hated the fact that he was an out front Trump admirer, and they would always kind of let him have it. And so they decided to do a debate between Nick, who's about the only person who'd probably be willing to do a debate on the BU campus against the campus student president. And Nick just wiped the floor with him, just wiped the floor with him. That got him to the attention of someone, Cassie Dillon. And Cassie was a part of the Daily Wire crew. She was a friend of the head of that, Shapiro. And so she sponsored him and made sure that he had got a radio spot on campus, his own show, but helped sponsor it and everything else. And he thought it was great. He became friend of old Cassie's friend. Until he said something about Israel. Now, he didn't realize that the Daily Wire and sure and everything are very much Zionist, very much pro-Israel, and really did not interested in anything that was not on that line. In fact, hated it. But he didn't seem to get the message very well, so he kept on bringing it up. And so then they decided to cancel him. He was no more would talk to him. All his friends on Daily Wire wouldn't talk to him. They decided that out he goes. But he still had a radio program or podcast, rather, even it wasn't sponsored by the Daily Wire. And then they kind of went after him everywhere they could. He tried to get a job at various Republican and conservative outlets. Nope. He was blackballed from wherever he went. And they would send out, some girl had recorded him when he was saying something outrageous. And so they went after, use that, say, hey, this is what this guy's like. You can't have him. He can't be part of any organization or anything else. And so he was just kind of stuck with his own program. He dropped out of school as they weren't going to be nice to him there either, and started his own podcast 10 years ago. It became popular for whatever reason, and we'll talk about that later on, and started attracting more and more adherents. He went down to, at age 18, almost 19, Unite the Right in Charlottesville. And that was, of course, even better use of the Daily Wire crew to after him, saying he is now a white nationalist, a bigot. I forget what other ones they use, but they could say he went to that event, and so that's what he must be. Normally, that'd be enough to discourage anybody and say, I think I'll get him to plumbing or you know, painting or something new or different, but he didn't. And his father said, well, give it a year, and then get out of there, get a real job or go to some other university. But he kept at it. He kept at it. And for a decade now, he has been a voice for the alt-right. And he has been a thorn, I said, in Charlie Kirk's side. His gropers, his followers called gropers, would show up at the events and argue against him from the right side. And Charlie Kirk hated that, just absolutely hated that. So that was kind of the state of a play up until 2 months ago, the end of October. when Tucker Carlson, maybe the most influential conservative there is, decided to have him on his podcast. Ooh-wee. And it was not a mean interview. He asked you, you know, how did you grow up and what was your background? And he asked some nice questions. And Nick said some usually provocative things like he always remembers December 18th because that's Stalin's birthday and he's a fanboy of Stalin. Now there's really only, he's maybe the only fanboy of Stalin in the world. Even in the Soviet Union, there are not too many Stalin fanboys. But there was no follow-up on that. Tucker didn't follow up. So he finished that, and that set the world afire. That set the world afire. In particularly, they're wanting to cancel him. Mark Levin, Shapiro, others demanded that Tucker be canceled now. No, it wasn't sufficient for Nick to be canceled. He'd already been canceled. But how dare Tucker Carlson platform? Now, platform's an interesting word. It's usually giving somebody something to broadcast. But for them, interview became platform. And that seemed a little bizarre to people. I mean, Julie interviewed mass murderers in prison. Was she platforming mass murder? Nobody would really think that was. And so everybody was a little unclear why all this hatred was coming to Tucker Carlson. But it was endless. And it really came to a head at the Republican Jewish Coalition in another place in Las Vegas, in which Mark Levin, among others, gave a speech. And I'd like to play that for you. It's a speech that really is amazing. Mark Levin is a Fox newscaster. He has his show, Life, Liberty, and Levin, that's on Saturday nights on Fox. And Sean Hannity has always called him the great one. And it's kind of interesting that Nick Fuentes was a big follower of Mark Levin. But Levin basically says, not only should you be canceled, Tucker, but everybody who tolerates you, Tucker, anybody who's a friend of you ought to be canceled, and the world ought to be canceled. Everything you say should be canceled. Any friend of your friends should be canceled. He kind of extended it to the world. It was one of the more hate-filled speeches, and I wish we could play it for you, in a long time. It could have been not more unpleasant, and his tone, being Levinian, was truly awful. And so he alienated huge numbers of people. Shapiro went on, and he also attacked everyone who and demanded that Tucker Carlson be canceled. He had to be canceled, along with anybody who liked Tucker Carlson. That's a lot of people. And he had a lot of friends like Megyn Kelly. And Megyn Kelly said, well, I won't cancel him. And so they will cancel Megyn Kelly. She can't be talked to anymore. Anybody else who's even known who Tucker Carlson was must be canceled. Well, that didn't bring a lot of happiness to that side of the Republican Party that didn't agree with Levin or Shapiro and their, I guess he called pro-Israel, pro-Zionist outlook. And so then Piers Morgan, famous British journalist, has his show Piers Morgan Uncensored, and he decided to do a two-hour proper examination of Nick Fuentes. He was going to let him have it. You know, if Tucker was too much of a chicken shit to do it, well, then good old Piers Morgan would. And for 2 hours, he railed on him. Just would say, this is an ambush interview. I'll just interview things. He goes right to, and so he starts off attacking Fuentes' father, first off. He says, well, do you really come from a background of hate and everything else? Because your father was a hater. He was a racist. And and all that. And Fuentes said, you know, you can attack me all you want. You can call me racist. In fact, I considered myself to be a racist along with everybody else. But you can leave my father out. And of course, he didn't for six more times. He just kept on emphasizing that Nick Fuentes was a racist. You've admitted you're a racist. You are a racist, aren't you? Yeah. Kind of using it similar to a baby kill. You admitted you killed that family and those babies, didn't you? And Fuentes is nonplussed. No, yeah, okay, I'm a racist. You want to call me a racist? Call me a racist. But don't bring my family into it. Don't bring my father into it. He doesn't subscribe to my beliefs. And why don't you just leave it alone? And of course, Piers Morgan did not. And then he kept on attacking wherever else he could possibly attack him. And then he came to and said, basically, I don't know what the answer to this, and you don't have to answer me if you want, but are you attracted to women? And he said, yeah, I'm attracted to women. He said, aren't you gay? And he went, no, I'm not gay. And that seemed to fluster Piers a little bit, but he talked about, okay, well, you don't think women should vote, and you don't think women should do this, and you don't think women should do that. You're just a dinosaur. You're awful. And have you ever had sex with a woman? He said, no, I'm a virgin. And he goes, wow, you need to get laid, and starts mocking him for not getting laid. Now, this was a little strange because as a practical matter, as a Catholic, you know, you're not supposed to have, we have him. I have him. He's in, we'll have him in a few minutes. Great, great. Well, this will help this whole thing out. We'll have him in a few minutes. So he starts mocking him that he's a virgin, as if, because that violates, you know, the ethos of the post-World War II era. The free love. I mean, you know, what liberals promised you was guilt-free and sex without having to worry about any of its complications after the pill. So that's one of the great blessings of liberalism, free sex, and that he was violating that by not taking advantage of it. So it was a kind of an interesting debate. So afterwards, Fuentes' followers, the Kuipers, decide to go into Piers Morgan's background. And what they found was amazing. Do we have any of the videos starting with Levin yet?
Hitler admirers, Stalin admirers, Jew haters, American haters, Churchill haters. You're damn right we're going to cancel them and deplatform them. It's called the market system. They don't have a lifetime job like a bureaucrat who we're going to protect. And if they're your friend, there's something wrong with you. No Hitler admirer, Holocaust denier, platformer should be anybody's friend, as a matter of fact. You don't get to wrap your psychotic, mental, unhinged, Nazi, Klan, jihadist bullshit around American patriotism. You don't get to claim you're MAGA and America first when you're lining up with the Marxists and the Islamists and Hamas and the terrorists. That's not America first. That's sick.
And then he goes on to attack other people. But that's kind of hectoring tone he had that everybody found unbelievably unpleasant, and how many people get attacked. And he said, among other things, we canceled Pat Buchanan. I didn't know they had canceled Pat Buchanan, but he said he had, and we're going to cancel anybody who's a friend of Pat Buchanan. I guess everybody's going to be canceled that Mark Levin doesn't approve of, because I guess Mark Levin gets to decide. So let's go to Piers Morgan's attack on Nick Fuentes' father.
So my question, based on that anecdote that you say on your own podcast, is, do you think you grew up in a racist environment? that your father was inherently racist and that that thought process moved to you?
Well, I would say it's a new low. I've been attacked for being a racist many times, but to attack my father, to attack my parents based on anecdotes, I would say
it's your anecdote.
Yeah, but he's not here to defend himself.
You are.
And my parents are.
You told the story.
And I will. I'm not trying to ambush you.
As I said at the start, Nick, to be clear.
No, it's not an ambush.
Nick, to be clear,
I'm not ambushing you.
I'm literally reading an anecdote that you revealed on your podcast. It's you that's put it in the public domain.
I know.
I'm simply asking you whether my assessment of that, which is that your father didn't want to take you to certain restaurants because of what you refer to as they were commonly known as black fare, whether that attitude to African Americans in that instance permeated to you. It's a reasonable question.
Yeah, no, like I said, I think everybody knows what that is, but I'll address it. I'll engage with it and I'll defend my father from the charge of racism.
Sure.
No, my parents are not racist and they've never been racist. I'll tell you about my parents. They used to have a school.
And it goes on to explain his parents had a school for shooting and had a lot of people from the South Side who were African Americans who went to it and everything else. That's 2 hours. This is 2 hours. And there are other parts where Pierce doesn't seem to get basic mathematics. He says, well, all you worry about is black crime. What about white crime? And, you know, how many people are school shooters, mass school shooters? How many of those are white? And he says, well, I don't know, but probably more than black. But really, the statistic is what is the denominator of all white people and the numerator being the amount engaged in mass shootings, which he says will be 0.0001. Then it says, what is the populated black people compared to how many well engaged in crimes or murder. And he says it's really 5% or more. And for whatever reason, Piers Morgan can't seem to get the concept and keeps on putting it off and say, well, you know, I'm looking at this. Yeah, but give me the number. Can't do it. And so the whole interview sort of went like that, with Piers Morgan getting some shots in, but really getting punched pretty badly, and particularly a lot of objection to his claiming that unless you're getting laid, you can't talk about much of anything. Virgins are bad people. So then the Groypers decided to look into his background, and they found in his marriage, he's married a second time to a woman named Celia Ward, and she seems to have engaged in one plain thing: going online and ritualistically mocking and going after her husband. She notes that when they got married, he said she clicked all of his boxes. She said he didn't click any of mine, constantly indicating that he's something of a fool. And she just barely tolerated him because he was such a simp. And so maybe we can put up one of her nice little tweets she put out as a picture. Here it is. And so there's a buff African-American man doing a car. And she says, when her husband away, Mr. Suds comes out to play, implying that she's having sex. And she does that repeatedly over various ones. It's a little closer. And if we could go to the next one, which is he's advertising for a pool boy, lying provocatively on the side of a pool. Okay, we'll need a minute. But anyway, what it says is she languids on her back, saying, looking for a pool boy, no pool experience needed. And she repeats these humiliations. So it's obviously that Piers Morgan is some combination of an extreme sexual masochist and a cuckold. And it seems kind of funny that he decides to go after Nick Fuentes. You can see why he doesn't like the fact that Nick is a virgin, because that offends his boomer sensibilities. And he really presents all the boomer sensibilities. He also attacks Nick on the Holocaust. Nick has at times indicated he thought that there weren't quite 6 million Jews killed. I want you to play the virgin file. Sure, put it up. And he said that he didn't really indicate he would indicate there were less than 6 million ones. Here we go.
One of the many theories about you, I've no idea what the answer is, and you haven't got to answer. But are you actually attracted to women?
I am attracted to women.
You're not gay.
No. But I will say that women are very difficult to be around.
Okay.
So there's that.
And do you think they should have the right to vote?
I do not. No, absolutely not.
They should stay at home?
Well, yeah, absolutely.
So basically, you're just a misogynist old dinosaur, aren't you? For a young guy.
Yeah.
I mean, I know I'm the boomer. I know I'm the boomer here. But actually, you're a 27-year-old dinosaur, aren't you? Aren't you, Nick Fuentes? All women.
I am. I'm,
all women are annoying. All women grow old. They all get fat. Says the guy. Have you ever had sex?
No, absolutely not.
Wow. Says the guy who's never got laid.
That was kind of his mocking tone. And now we'll have the other one from his wife, the other one that she put up, the pool boy one. And she posts this periodically, you know, throughout their kind of interesting marriage. And it's if you have pool boy and Cecilia, his wife, tweet, we got that one coming up momentarily. Here it is. Yeah, pool boy, just saying, wanted pool boy. No experience needed, and she also could applying for a pool boy now. Well, you know, somewhat strange. It's really kind of pathetic. They said, you know, and Nick explains like his explanation of the Holocaust. He doesn't know, he doesn't say Holocaust didn't exist. He doesn't say that he's for genocide, but he does say that it's used as a political culture anytime anyone wants to dispute anything with regard to Israel, generally speaking, that Holocaust museums are put everywhere just to dominate their victimhood of the Jewish people, and that he's tired of it and he doesn't want to hear it anymore. He doesn't worry about the Armenian massacre. He doesn't worry about the great starvation in Ukraine. And he doesn't worry about any of Mao's millions of slaughtered and his wife's more slaughtering and the cultural. He doesn't, you know, he says, you know, they're all there, but that's, they're, I think the Woody Allen line that he's surprised in the movie, saying surprised that the Holocaust didn't occur more often. And the answer is it did occur more often to a lot of people. And he says it's used as a political culture for people, and people can like that or dislike it. There's no question that Nick Fuentes is provocative. He probably is a misogynist. He probably is a racist. But somehow, what 5 years ago, I would say, Piers Morgan would have totally dominated. He would have totally dominated the conversation. And won the conversation, but here he didn't, and he came across as a zoomer, which generation he is, against the boomer, and the boomer really came off looking petty, small, pathetic, sad, and the if you go online and look on the Google, If you look at, Axios and the other left-wing publication, they'll say that Piers Morgan won, and hooray, hooray, hooray. But if you look at X or you look at any of the online ones, including anything in the comments on the show itself by Piers Morgan, he gets crushed. And the show has now been seen by now 24 million people. I mean, some enormous number of people have struck onto it. And so now there's no denying Nick Fuentes. He's become, if they had him in the bag, he's no longer in the bag. He's certainly hateable in a lot of ways, but Piers Morgan managed to accomplish a seemingly difficult task of becoming far more hateable. So that brings us to, why are people following Nick Fuentes? Why does he have over a million people that follow him on Twitter? And why does he have such a huge podcast now? And I think to understand that, you have to understand two seminal articles, and they're both published in a magazine called Compact. So if you don't get Compact or don't go online and look at Compact, you should, because they'll publish articles that the other mainstream sites will not. And the first of those two articles is The Lost Generation by Jacob Savage. He was a screenwriter, and he talked about, starting in 2014, the DEI started to really bite hard. He'd spent 5 or 6 years paying his dues, scraping by doing SAT prep and other things. And when he finally got to the point where he had enough body of work and others to get a job, he found out he couldn't get a job. That there's no jobs to be had because he was a white male, and there isn't one. Some of the statistics that come out, TV writers and other ones in 2011, 48% of them were white males. Today, they're 11. And I promise you, those 11 are old. They're just frozen out totally. And it doesn't matter what the field is. DEI spread through every corporation virtually. And those that didn't simply got quickly sued. And they learned very quickly, either by Department of Justice or by individual ones under the Civil Rights Act in 1964, and were paying a massive liabilities. And so they changed. And so that really, for this guy, there was no market. And he points out that there's no market for lots of other young males. And he has an old generation who could not get a job, except the most, driving a car, maybe being a barista. That was sort of it, even there. They'd be discriminated against. And you can look at other ones. For example, Secret Service under Biden. They decided they wanted 30% of the workforce of women by 2030. And that doesn't sound too extreme, except you understand in order to get there, every hire has to be female. There can be no male hires whatsoever to get to your goal. And so if you saw the attempt on the life of Donald Trump, you had these 5'1" women shielding him, except they only came up to his chest. You had another overweight woman trying to get her gun out of her holster and couldn't do it and dropped it on the ground. But that was just one of many ones where really males were excluded. Another one under the Biden administration was air traffic controllers, a field that was used to be dominated by white males and people with a kind of a engineering background. And they were prohibited more or less. I mean, you could be disabled maybe and be one, but you had to fit into some group other than a non-physically harmed white male, or you just couldn't be hired. There were no jobs for you in a field that used to be a lot of jobs. And so that from 2014 on, that basically drove out an incredible number of of jobs that white males just simply no longer could qualify for. Now, I'm a boomer, and it really doesn't affect me very much, but I have a 14-year-old son that, as far as I know, is a heterosexual Christian male, and he will find it very difficult to get a job, very difficult to get a job, unless the DEI changes. And, of course, Trump is in part doing that. The problem is that corporations, I'd say in the federal workforce, that's starting to go, but in corporations, it's not, because jobs, promotion, anything else is governed by a thing called disparate impact. So if you have anything that affects a protected group adversely, then you're subject to a lawsuit and to pay attorney's fees and everything else. Well, as a practical matter, everything is a disparate impact on everyone. There's nothing that's going to go across the line and match out exactly according to demographics of age, race, gender, etc. And so there's always been disparate impact. For example, if you're a fireman, you're expected to carry fire hoses and you have to be able to lift a 10-pound weight, well, that's going to exclude some women, or a 20-pound weight or a 30-pound weight. Well, then you get sued and you have to change that test. IQ tests are also another one where or aptitude tests for engineering or anything else is going to disparate income. So your only choice in promotion and job hiring is not to hire any white males, or hire the absolute fewest you have, maybe make exceptions for a couple of veterans or something. And Jacob Savage points out that, so you have a whole generation of men that can't get a job. Without a job, they're certainly not getting married and certainly not having children or anything else. And so they have zero investment in society. And if those people somehow are bitter, if the gropers are bitter and angry at the system, well, you can understand why they're bitter and angry at the system. It's interesting that Jacob Savage wrote this article for The Atlantic, which is a left-wing one, and when he turned it in and said, tell you what, you can talk about your own one, but we don't want you to generalize. No. You can just make it about how you couldn't get a job in the TV industry and the film industry, writing, and nothing beyond that. So what he did is he got Compact Magazine, which is a newer one, started in 2022, to the thing, and it's been all over the place. It's been expanded incredibly broadly. And that's another one on Compact that couldn't get published anywhere, is by Helen Andrews, who did The Great Feminization. And I found this article unbelievably enlightening. So that's Helen Andrews on Compact Magazine, The Great Feminization. And she points out how all parts of society have become feminized, and what the effect of having a majority women as opposed to majority males, how that changes any institution or anyone else. And she points out that in general, women tend to be more empathetic. Men tend to be more into rationality. Women tend to be more for safety. Men tend to be more for risk. Women tend to like cohesion, where everyone comes to an agreed solution. Men prefer competition in general. And so if you have a majority female workforce in any particular one, well, empathy, safety, and cohesion are going to be values that the organization holds, and rationality, risk, and competition will go out the door. Because those are basically masculine ones, male particular prerequisites. And then it points out that interesting, as they say, take the New York Times back in 74, there was 70, they had 50, well, 10% back in 74 were female. Today they're 55%. Medical schools have been majority female since 2019. The one that I know most about is law, since I'm a lawyer. And I got my alumni magazine from my law school, CU, where it went into the ratio of men compared to women. And it showed that the university was, law school was closing into 60% women and 40% men. Well, that's going to change the law. That's going to change how they do it. And they point to Title IX, where if you're accused of assaulting a woman, that you couldn't cross-examine, you didn't have the right to confront your one, that you'd be a reasonable doubt was thrown out, because the writers of it were empathetic toward what they saw with the victims, and had no intention of having a what would be considered a more rational or a more objective-based investigation. So they often got convicted where they wouldn't get convicted and convicted otherwise. I went to an all-boys prep school, and I didn't want to go to an all-male boys Ivy League school, so I went to Vanderbilt. And it was still 60% male and 40% female. And I felt, gee, that's unfortunate, because I got to compete with the 60% for attraction to the 40%. In retrospect, I guess I was lucky it was 60%, because the values of the university would have drastically changed if it was inverse. And I assume today it is the inverse. So you're going to get trial like they did for Kavanaugh, where Kavanaugh, did anybody think it was fair to accuse him of quote unquote rape 30 years before based on a woman who really couldn't remember when, where, how, or anything else? Well, women kind of, well, I still believe it, and men, oh, this is ridiculous. You can't just, and they go, hey, yeah, we can. Sure, we can. And if the Supreme Court gets a majority female, maybe that'll be the thing for the law too. But there are huge consequences when you become a majority female of anyone. And I didn't previously consider that. I considered that it didn't really matter what the percentages were. I certainly did not consider that Vanderbilt would be a great deal more hostile place to go if it was majority female. And they point out, Helen points out, the difference. Watch a debate in the parliament in England in 1915 compared to today. And it's drastically different. Drastically. One is much more hard-edged and everything else. The other is worrying about people's empathy and feelings. And so if you're a young boy, like many of these gropers were, and you go through, for example, grade school, almost, some huge percentage of the teachers are female, and a lot of them are hostile to males. One of the results of that is that they're quick to diagnose any child who doesn't sit in a chair like a proper little boy very long as having HDAD, and to prescribe medicine for them in the form of Adderall or other ones, which strangely that those are uppers, but they slow you down if given in the right doses. Well, so you're drugged out, your entire, and those kids who really could sit still because they had all that energy, the boys had all that energy, were your future explorers, your future military adventurers, the people willing to take risks because they had all that energy. And so they basically chemically castrated them. And when they weren't chemically castrating, they were physically castrating by saying, aren't you transgender? Don't you identify with the other sex? And if they happen to say yes, well, then you go down a rabbit hole in which all of a sudden you find your hospital strapped down as they cut your genitals off. And then 10 years later, you kind of go, oh, what have you done to me? And it's no, I think, incident that a lot of the killers, murderers lately, have been people that have been trans-oriented. Charlie Kirk's one. He had become a friend with a furry and a tranny and other ones. Because how would you like to feel if all of a sudden you woke up 10 years later and decided that was a mistake? Well, there's no coming back to that. So it's you've gone through a whole generation. I know at Rev School, and Rev School was very good, Charter Academy, and I think they were great teachers, but overwhelmingly female, overwhelmingly female. He had one teacher, one, who appropriately was called Mr. Mail, but spelled M-A-I-L. And he was a football coach, and he was the one the boys liked very much. They kicked him out because he wouldn't take the vaccine shot. He wouldn't take the COVID-19 shot. So the one male teacher who was clearly masculine, I mean, they may have had another one that was more feminine, the one masculine teacher was blown out of the school because he wouldn't take the incredibly dangerous and harmful COVID-19 shot. And so the boys don't have any male role models. Often with our divorced society, brought up in a single parent household, and it's almost inevitably female. There's no male there. And so they have no one to emulate or know how to emulate. And we've excluded males from most of parenting, and males don't sometimes want to be parenting, but considered a societal obligation that no longer exists. So you've gone through that. You've gone through, you're not going to get a job. Most women still want the male to make more money. Well, if you're the one who doesn't get the promotions or the jobs, you ain't earning more. So you're not going to be allowed that either. And so what Jacob Savage calls the lost generation really is a whole group of males that have been discriminated against for their entire lives. And some of them, not all of them, some of them are angry, bitter, and they're going to follow Nick Fuentes, no matter how ridiculous and know how it's sometimes unacceptable his views are, because they don't care about acceptability anymore. They don't care what the parents think are acceptable or society thinks acceptable, because he sees society as a sick place. And in many ways, it is a sick place. All right, well, now our time's up. Boy, that went fast, incredibly fast. And that's our Nick Fuentes one, for better or worse. Julie will be back on our next show to give a little more feminine perspective, thankfully. And we'll see you all till next time. Take care.